Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Napalm smells best in the evening. It's not worth believing what you heard. Soil and green, really, just a trinket, not a people biscuit. Take my word. It said you can handle the truth, but that ain't so. How do I know?
Hello and welcome to I Was There Too, the show where I, who is Matt Gourley, talk to people who were there in the memorable scenes of cinema history. But today, the scene, and in fact, the role in question, was unfortunately, and ill-advisedly, if I do say, cut from the film. So I am very excited to present what is actually a second installment of what I'm calling the I Wasn't There Too series. Now, I've done this before with Paul Scheer and his doomed role in Eddie Murphy's Meet Dave. Check that out on Stitcher Premium. And I had so much fun with it, I jumped at the chance to do it again. Especially with today's guest, Jimmy Pardo, who I just love to the ends of the earth. In today's film, Dreamgirls, he plays the role of comedian, and it was just a wonderful conversation we had. So, with no further ado, let's get into this.
The film, Dreamgirls. The year, 2006. The role, comedian. The actor, Jimmy Pardo.
Get ready.
All right.
Get ready. All right, I'm going to follow your lead.
Yeah, you got it.
And this is going to be so awkward this far into it. Matt? Come on, that's fun. That's a Pardo classic.
I hope we were already recording. Yeah. We were? Well, then let's just begin already. I'm sitting in this room with a man that is having trouble with his headphones. Before I extol his praises. Is that a phrase?
It could be to me.
You can't extol praises.
I don't think these headphones are on.
You can extol a person.
There we go. Am I on? There we go. All right.
Sing his praises.
There we go.
Yeah. I don't know. I just love this guy. Just
oh, thank you.
No, you don't understand how much. And so having you in here for Dreamgirls or for whatever reason was – it's just a pleasure for me.
Well, it's my honor. I'm thrilled. I just saw you. I was at the gymnasium this morning and I saw you telling me to buy a Jetta.
And which is funny because you drive a different make of car, right?
I have – this is the first American-made vehicle that I've bought in God, it's got to be 20 years.
And you've had some issues with the dealer. We won't go into it.
Yeah, I've had some issues with the dealer.
Like minutes ago.
Minutes ago. You saw me shaking.
You're charged.
Me yelling at a man on the telephone. And then as is my way, and I spoke about this, I think it was my first appearance on Conan where I talked about going to Macy's.
Uh-huh.
And they were having a shoe sale and I had two boxes of shoes. And then when I went up to the counter, nobody's waiting on me. And then the guy looks at the guy behind me in line and goes, can I help you, sir? And I go, what am I, effing invisible? And the guy goes, oh, well, who's helping you? I go, apparently effing nobody. And threw the shoes up in the air. And just like in slow motion, the boxes, the shoes come out of the boxes. The shoes start tumbling down. And by the time that they reach the bottom, I'm like, I'm very sorry. I need to apologize. I had no idea that my
that
temper.
Quickly?
Yeah. And then I looked around for my wife, and she was hiding behind some, you know, like a display of shirts or something. And I came around the corner just laughing. And she goes, oh, good, we're going to laugh at this one? So it's ridiculous.
That so, one had to be just an oversight, because he would be the biggest asshole on earth to look straight past you.
He looked – how was that an oversight to look like
He chose not to choose you?
I'm telling you, a human being's behind you right now.
Yeah.
And I look over your head and go, could I help you, sir? How is that an oversight?
Well, I mean, it literally is.
You know what? It really is. I take it back. It's exactly an oversight.
Did we figure this out?
Yeah.
Well, Jimmy Pardo's in here today. We're talking about Dreamgirls. You were cast in Dreamgirls 2006. I want you to take me through just beginning to end. Usually I have all sorts of questions, and I do here, but
You have questions about the filmmaking, about the making of this movie?
I do. I actually do. But just being familiar with you, I think it's better to just have a free-form conversation.
You sure? I'm more than happy to answer any questions.
I'll put them in there if they aren't.
I want to hear what one of them is. Give me one.
Do you want like the most ridiculous or
sure.
Let's see.
And again, based on my experience at Dreamgirls, I'm going to be able to answer a lot of this.
Okay, well, here's one. See, I don't exactly know who was involved in your scene actor-wise, but I have here, Bill Condon reportedly instructed Jennifer Hudson to show up late on set every day to better understand Effie's diva behavior. Can you confirm that?
You know what? I cannot confirm that aspect, but what I can tell you is that I thought that Jennifer Hudson was kind of a diva up until maybe, and I'm not joking, a month ago, when somebody interviewed her, and I said, how is Jennifer Hudson? And they went, she's the nicest person in the world. She's down to earth. She's great. She's wonderful. I was like, boy, that wasn't my experience.
Oh my God.
It was because of that. Like Beyonce could not have been nicer. Annika could not have been nicer. We were all in the dressing in the makeup trailer together. And Jennifer was staying on. And I chalked it up to it's her first major movie. It's a major movie. She carries the movie. Maybe she just doesn't want to be playful and fun. Although it was Beyonce's first movie too, now I say that. But maybe she was nervous or whatever. So I chalked it up to that. Not that she was unpleasant or divinous, but just standoffish.
Yeah. That would be my worst nightmare, to be first time in a film and have the director tell you to do this thing. So you want to please the director, but you know that will cost how you're treating the other people on the set, and I would just quit.
You would actually walk off.
I would walk off as it would seem like I was a diva, but I don't have it in my heart to do that, you know, like to be standoffish to people.
I'll tell you what, though, it paid off. She got an Oscar for it.
Well, that's why I haven't won an Oscar. In fact, don't really do that much in the first place, I think. I don't know. So how did this all begin for you?
Here's what happens. Now, listen, when you're in show business like I am, you know, working on this picture was quite an experience. I'll be that windbag. This is crazy. I get a phone call out of the blue from my manager saying, and this movie was like, what, 11 years old already?
Yeah.
So this was 2006. I get a call saying, hey, you've just been put on hold, which, as you know, is a term in acting where they may or may not use you on a certain day.
No audition, just out of the blue, you're
out
put
of the
on
blue.
Hold.
You're put on hold for Dreamgirls.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah. He goes, I had some guys go in for the, did you watch it? Did you rewatch it?
Yeah.
There's Bobby Slayton plays
the Miami comic.
Is that what they call him?
Well, he's like a Joey Bishop type, right?
He's like a Don Rickles Bishop-y.
Yeah. His credit is Miami comic.
He said, yeah, I had some guys go in for that role. He said, but they're just calling for you to be the MC at a club and a club owner who's going to introduce the Dreams. I'm like, okay. So they put me on a 2-week avail, which means, as you know, you get paid every day for 2 weeks.
Oh.
So I had some travel. I was supposed to go to Lexington, Kentucky for the first time ever. We had to cancel within 2 days saying, I'm not coming. I'm going to be in a major motion picture. And then we get the call literally as soon as it's like the plane would have left to go to Lexington. We get the call. It's not going to be this week. It'll be next week.
Oh.
But you still get paid, right? I'm getting paid like I'm working 2 weeks on a movie.
Right.
They send over the script. And I'm looking, I read the entire script, I go, where the hell's this part? I don't even know where this part is. Like, I'm literally reading the script backwards and forwards, like, well, it must be that comedian thing. It must be that Bobby Slayton role. Yeah. That's the only one that makes sense because they responded, my manager said they responded to your cadence, they responded to your look, they responded to the way that you work a crowd. I'm like, well, it's got to be that.
But you didn't submit any material? They were just going off of footage they had of you doing stand-up?
Man, I have no idea. To this second, I have no idea. So I and you don't want to ask, and I'll come around to that in a minute. So I'm looking at it. I'm like, well, it's got to be that, right? So I start memorizing that part,
which is almost verbatim from a Rickles routine.
It's basically
right?
a Rickles routine. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Okay.
Right. Look at you, lady. It's 104 degrees in here. You're the only one wearing a stole or something. You know, something like that, right?
Yeah. And then it gets real racial.
Then it gets really racial, yeah. Like uncomfortably racial. Yeah. Even watching the movie.
Yeah.
So. I don't know how much you want to give away if you have more questions, but I
– no, take it.
Then they then – I say – I call my manager. I go, is it this role that I've been memorizing for the last day and a half? And he goes, no. That's the one I had guys go in on and read. I think they gave that to Slayton. Might have already been shot. Okay. Well, what part is it? He's like, yeah, let me look. So he reads the script. He goes, Jim, I have no idea. So we literally like, have no idea what part I'm going to be in Dreamgirls, but I'm on hold for 14 days for this big part. So and now I'm thinking, like, is this real? Did I really get a phone? Like, and then the second AD would call and go and tell me, you know, it's looking good for tomorrow. And then I'd get a call an hour later. It's not going to happen tomorrow. Okay, fine. So I'm just kind of going through life.
Is this in town here in L.A.?
It was in town. They shot at where Mad Men shot. What is that? Hollywood Center.
Gower's? Is it Gower's Studios?
No, it's downtown.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about. The old LA Times buildings? That's.
I think it's those. Yeah, those. Numbers shot there.
Yeah. It may still be the LA Times building, but they, you know, the state
they,
of
they
print.
Vanished. That's right.
There's a few empty floors, I think, unfortunately.
I think even Comedy Bang Bang was over there for a minute.
They were.
Minute
yeah, that's
or two.
Right. Yeah.
I get the call finally. Tomorrow's the day. You know, we'll send over your new sides. Again, I don't know what the old sides are.
Well, at least you know new ones are coming.
Yeah, new ones are out of the way. And they send the exact same thing. And I'm like, what the F is – I don't know what part I'm doing here. So I finally have to say to the second assistant, I go – I don't say dude. It's not a word I use. I go, what part am I doing? He goes, oh, you're the God, what is it? I can't think of it. I used to have this line memorized. The crystal room. You're the crystal room club owner MC.
Okay.
And it's in there. It's in the script as a VO, but Bill loves you and wants to do it on camera. Because this is the first time that the dreams are going to be introduced as the dreams. Because every other time they're introduced throughout the movie, it's all VO.
Uh-huh.
With the exception of when they are the Dreamettes and Ralph Harris introduces them when they're doing that talent contest.
Right.
But other than that, it's please welcome the sultry sounds of Jimmy Early. And it's everything's VO. Uh-huh. But he wanted this one to be, according to this guy, this one's special because it's the first time introducing the dreams. So Bill Condon wants to make a big deal out of it.
Really quickly, did your manager not contact them and ask them this? You had to ask them this.
Yeah, that seems like something he should have handled, huh? That seems again, it's 10 years ago.
Especially since you asked him. It's like, I got no idea. I'm with you, buddy. I don't know. Like, I get it.
Yeah, I get it. I understand your confusion. I'm with you. I get it. So yes, that's explained to me. So you know, and the thing that I hate the most about show business, and this is why I don't do a lot of acting, also my limited talent plays into that. I can't stand being there all day. Hmm. I mean, I really, really, I despise it. I like – listen, the work itself is wonderful. But I despise get there at 4 a.m. and then you're going to wait or, you know, or whatever needs to happen, like unnecessary just – downtime. Yeah, like I can't, I really can't stand it.
I think I relate in that you can't concentrate enough to read a book because you've got a certain amount of adrenaline going. So you just sit there and slightly just chew at your fingers and stuff like
Matt, perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. And it's because I don't work enough to be able to read the book.
Same here.
If I worked more, maybe I could go, because my wife always goes, just bring a book.
Yeah,
it's you bring impossible. Your iPod. Do whatever you got to do.
You can't concentrate.
You can't concentrate. No. So all you do, in my case, it was like three lines, is I just say those three lines over and over until it's my time, right?
So and hope they catch you at the beginning of the cycle of the three lines.
Right. So it's not hark the bell. What's that famous one where the Shakespeare one where they would always use that as the example of is it hark who goes there?
Oh, the Hamlet one?
Yeah. What is that one?
Hark who goes there? It's got to be, right?
It's got to be that.
When the two guards see Hamlet's ghost, his father's ghost.
Yeah, you know more about the bard than I do.
Clearly, I don't. I defer back to you.
Let me call my manager. He'll help us. So,
no idea, buddy. But man,
good luck. They watch you. They heard your call time. So and by the way, I was also cast in the quick side story in The Informant. Is that the name of that movie?
Yeah.
No.
Yes. The one. Yeah. The Steven Soderbergh one with Matt Damon.
Yeah. I was one of the 900 comics that was cast in that. And the night before, and by the way, memorized, ready to go.
Oh, no.
And even as I read that script, I'm like, hey, you know what scene they don't need in this movie?
Oh, no.
So the night before, I'm like, here we go. My call time's tomorrow. 4 o'clock. They called me like at 4 o'clock. Hey, you know what? I'm going to go to a movie. I'm going to veg out. I'm pulling into the movie. The phone rings. Hey, it's Steve over here at The Informant. Yeah, we're not going to need you. Oh. They cut the.
Oh. What was your part? What was the scene?
It was a. It was kind of another redundant scene where they're patting down.
You're a cop,
Matt Damon, and Matt's stressing out that the wire is going to be found. It was another one of those with some funny banter. I forget who obviously I don't know who the other guy was.
Yeah.
It was our only scene, and it was going to be shot down at the Orange County John Wayne Airport.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
And that was going to be neat.
Yeah.
And again, and by the way, that was also a no audition thing. Maybe I'm literally it's a giant – I hate to use this phrase – punked. Maybe it's a giant Ashton Kutcher, Jimmy Pardo career punked.
Or it's just like a perfect karmatic balance of no audition, no role.
Right. Yeah. Well, you didn't do anything to get this. Why should you do it? So I've had that happen. So this was they call up the night before and I go, I think it was like a 5:30 a.m. call, which just that's the other about Hollywood. It's like, why would you think that's a good idea? Nobody wants to be there at 5:30 in the morning.
No.
Why don't you start at noon?
Yeah.
And go a little later.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Great. Are you home by 8 o'clock? Let's get home by midnight and start at noon. Like, I don't understand it. I really don't. So, and again, this is for my limited time working. So they say, 5:30 call. I get there at 5:30. It's at that hour, a 7-minute drive to my house. Uh-huh. Like, it's nothing.
That's beautiful.
It's nothing.
Yeah.
I get there. You know how it is. You get on the set. Nobody knows who you are. Nobody cares who you are.
Yeah.
You have the smallest of the trailers. It's tiny. I brought my book that's not going to be read. I got my iPad, my iPod. None of that's going to
Do you remember
happen.
The book by any chance?
I wish I did.
No.
Boy, oh boy, do I wish I did. And they say, I'm not out of my car. You're up first.
Jesus.
You're up first. We got to get you into makeup. You're up first. I'm like, okay, great. Bill's got a long day. They're doing the Dreams first song as the Dreams today. So that's going to probably take 12 hours. So we're going to knock you out. Oh. And then I'm like, I'll be home by 8 a.m.
Yeah, if this plays out that way, that's
Are you
the best
kidding
day
me?
In the
this
world.
Is the greatest thing in the world. So I'm rushed to makeup. As I mentioned, the girls are all – the girls. The women are all in the – they're getting their stuff and they're talking. And,
it's in the title. You're in
– that's true. Yeah, the Dream Girls fair. Themselves are there. And me, being – again, Beyonce and they were pleasant.
Uh-huh.
But they're in their own conversation and I'm the new guy on set.
Yeah.
Oh, how are you? Oh, I'm playing the thing. Okay, great. Makeup, they did slick my hair back to make it look, era friendly. Beautiful era friendly suit.
So this is like before things got wide lapelled, basically.
Sharp 60s,
Classic rat pat.
Beautiful. And then that was neat too. I did go for a fitting, of course, before all this.
Right.
And then seeing all those. That's always neat to see the artwork for the, you know, for the various characters.
Oh, yeah, the renderings, the costume renderings.
Thank
everything.
You.
Yes, yeah.
I couldn't think of the words.
Yeah.
I'm not in the business. So I get – so they go, you're up first. I'm like, great. So I'm in makeup. It's not even 10 after 6. I'm done. I'm in costume. I'm in makeup. They rush me there, and Bill goes, fuck, they lit for the wrong thing. It's going to be a little bit, but we're gonna get it in. And no exaggeration, every hour until 11:30 at night.
Oh, my God.
It's coming up next, man. It's coming up next. We're going to get you in there. It's coming up next. It's coming up next, man. We're going to get you in there. It's coming up next. And it's – and I'm – and I over and over just go – I go, guys, I live 3 miles away. Just let me go home.
Yeah.
Just let me go home. I'll be back. You don't have to worry. I'm coming back. I'm looking forward to doing my role in Dreamgirls. Don't worry. I'm not. It's not like I'm going to go missing.
Did you really ask them this?
I did. Yeah. I said, just let me go. I could run there and back, and you won't even know I'm gone. I could do this without you. No, man, I can't. You know, can't, you know, because you never know. You never know with Bill. You never know. He's going to, you know, he might say we need him right now, and then we can't even take the time for you to drive back in 7 minutes. All right. So now I'm in makeup. I'm in costume. For what is that? 16 hours?
God, what did you do that whole time?
I did exactly what you said. I chewed my fingers off. I just.
Because you think it's coming within minutes each time. That's a special kind of hell.
It was crazy. And then I was doing the Shakespeare thing where, like, then all of a sudden you start forgetting your lines.
Yeah.
You know, even though there's it's three of them.
Right.
You start forgetting. Is it a crystal ballroom? Is it a crystal room? Is it this? Is it that? The first line is it was just the crystal room is proud to present for the first time ever so-and-so recording artist, The Dreams or whatever. There was something going on. But I kept memorizing with ladies and gentlemen because it seemed crazy to come in halfway through a sentence. So then I'm going, well, wait a minute. Am I memorizing it wrong? No, I'm memorizing it right for 18 hours or whatever it was, doing a number on myself. So I would walk around the set and go watch them shoot this that wonderful first when they're in the white dresses.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the Crystal Room presents The Dreams. And it's the first time when they're not with Jimmy Early. And they come out and I watched them shoot that, which was fascinating to watch. You know.
Saw that. So you're watching that whole thing.
Well, not all 12 hours.
Right, but still. So they did that whole number. That was it. They did all of that before.
Didn't even finish
it. God. Oh, boy.
So at like 11:30, I think what happened was we got to get this guy out of here. Like you, Bill, you told this guy to be here 5:30 in the morning. You said he'd be up first and he's still like waiting around.
Yeah.
And then there was some other, like there were extras because, you know, they were for the crowd scene. They were released. They're even gone. Cause now they're, oh, that was it. They were widening, or they were doing it on the wide and now they were going to go to close ups. So they released the extras and I befriended one guy who, knew me from comedy. So he, I had that friend for several hours, which was welcome. And, I don't remember that guy's name. He was a very nice man. And so he and I were able – he's like – he goes, man, you've been here forever. So we're talking about that. And so then it comes time. They come to get me at like 11:30 at night, something crazy. The girls are all – they're in their costumes, Beyonce, Annika, and Jennifer. They're in their costumes, I don't know, 12 feet away from me. And they set up a microphone, old-timey crooner-style microphone. Yeah. They set that up and – with like a background that is going to be pitch black with just one spotlight hitting the side of my face. And they're looking at it. And my buddy, this guy who knows me from comedy, comes over and he goes, this is the best looking shot in the movie.
Oh my God. He goes,
you have no idea how – because he was watching it on the –
Wait, so he stuck around after everybody's left?
Yeah.
You need anything, Mr. Parler?
Yeah, I you know how it could be. It might have been his first extra job.
A nice fella.
And he's thrilled to be on the set.
Sure.
Wants to learn.
Yeah.
But he comes over and he goes, I wish you could see it. It's a beautiful shot. And so, and I felt, because it would be, you know, an action, pause, and then you hear the of that light. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that.
Like, yeah, right. That and then it hit me and then deliver my line. And I delivered it the first time with some adrenaline, admittedly. Like, you know how it, you know, like when you say it for the first time, it's the first time you're kind of really saying it out loud, not to yourself.
Right.
So I deliver it. And By the way, this is a long story.
No, this is what we're here for.
That zero pays off. This isn't Tobolowsky or who's the girl that I have a crush on that I can't pull her name right now from. Better Off Dead. Diane Franklin.
Yes,
it's not Diane. It's not. They had wonderful stories.
No. The whole point of this podcast is long stories with no closure. It might as well be titled that. Because ultimately, we're just talking little stories on the set.
Yeah, but Tobolowsky had 1,000 stories.
Well, he's a freak of nature.
Yeah, that's true. And so did Diane Franklin. She's got the coat. So,
And the hat.
I loved that episode. I love every episode of the show. I mean that sincerely.
You're kind.
Well, I adore you as much as you built me up in the intro.
Let's get out of here.
I'm in. Let's go not listen to music in my car. So I deliver a little adrenaline. Oh, so before I started, Bill Connor could not have been a nicer man. I mean, that's necessarily. Could not have been nicer. Apologizes. I'm so sorry that we made you wait this long. They fucked me over. They set the lights wrong. I wanted to get knocked this out before we did anything else. That's why you were here so early. I'm so sorry. Once it was lit for that, we had to let that play out. Blah blah blah. Hey, no.
Fair enough.
No problem.
Goes a long way.
No problem. As I bitched for 12 hours alone, he goes. I said, hey, you know that first line just kind of comes in. You know, the Crystal Ballroom seems weird now that it's not a VO. Do you mind if I say, ladies and gentlemen? And he goes, thank you. And he says it in a way where I don't know if he's telling me to shut my mouth or if he truly wants me to do it. You know what I mean? Thank you. Like, oh, shit. Did he just reprimand me? So then I went, I hate to bother you. Do you want the ladies? And he goes, yeah, of course. Thank you. Thank you for that. Like, okay, great. But I still kind of had that little oh, did I just piss him off?
There's nothing worse than putting your own idea into something and giving it at half confidence because then it will never work, right?
Right.
I mean, yeah.
So then I deliver the lines with some adrenaline, with some speed, some urgency that really wasn't necessary. But it was all admittedly adrenaline because I'm not in movies a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So – And here we are where they have a break while they do something else to fit this in. So there's kind of like, hey, you waited all day long, but now we got to get this done in 6 minutes.
Of course.
So let's go, buddy.
Yeah.
So I delivered, it's okay. And he goes, well, that's, same thing Ted Danson said to me on Becker. That's why we do more than one. I'm not good the first take, apparently.
Who is, though? God.
The great Ted Danson, that's who, sir.
Yeah, and that's why he is who he is. That's why he can say that to you.
That's right. And I panic that I'm going to get fired mid-word.
The thing you never hear is the second sentence where he goes, except for me.
he goes, that's why we do more than one. Let's do it. Let's take it again. And he goes, and, you own the club. You know, this is your club. You know, and he goes, and by the way, he did say at this point he's a big fan. He loves my comedy.
Oh, that's nice. That's got to feel good.
It felt great.
Vote of confidence.
Could have heard that 12 hours earlier.
Or even as the reason for why you got
right.
the part in the
How
first
about that?
Place.
How about any of that? So he's like, he goes, I'm a big fan. I think you're great. And he goes, I think it was explained why I'm doing this. I just think this is a special moment. And he goes, might not work, might work. You know, we'll figure that out in editing, but, looks beautiful. Let's get it done. Okay, great. So I do the second take. It's great. You know, as great as I can be.
Right.
We do a third one for safety. And he goes, let's just do another, as they always do. Let's do another one for safety. We did one more with the light hitting me on the other side of my face. Done. And I go, ladies and gentlemen, that's 13 hours of work right there. Beyonce falls over laughing. Hudson gives me the stink eye. Annika laughs. Bill Cotton comes over, gives me a big hug, laughs, and goes, thank you so much. Thank you for being patient. That was great. The extra guy comes running over. That was great. That was wonderful. It looks great. Oh, my God, it looks great. And he goes, and there's no way they're going to cut that. That's such an important part of the movie. This is great. You know, that's every actor's. For some reason, they're going to cut it.
Yeah.
I mean, the extra is thinking for me. They're going to cut this thing.
Right.
There's no way they're going to cut that. It looks too beautiful. It's too important to the thing. Well, if there's anything that can get cut, it's the thing that should have been a voiceover.
Yeah.
So, I 2 weeks of pay, literally 4 minutes of work. in a 13-hour or 18-hour day, but a 16-hour day, whatever it was. I get a nice charge out of Beyonce. She gets a nice laugh, right? Condon's a big fan.
Yeah.
Drive home. My wife can't believe, you know, even though I'm keeping in touch via telephone, she can't believe I'm there that long for this.
She's like, is he having an affair? What's going on here?
Listen, if there was ever a chance, it could have been any of those three ladies had they offered. Had they had any interest in the nerdy, tiny white guy, I would have left my wife. It would have been that easy. Jay-Z wouldn't have had a shot, right? I would have gone back to the cruise ships with Jennifer Hudson. So, and I, by the way, I love Jennifer Hudson on American Idol. I thought she was phenomenal. So I was thrilled. I was thrilled for Jenny that she had an opportunity to do this role. So that was it. And then I thought, look, in my head, it was like, this is crazy that I'm in this movie that has literally four white people in it.
Right.
Like, you know.
You're one of them, yeah.
And I'm one of them. You know, he had John Lithgow.
A few minutes. John Krasinski and John Lithgow, yeah, for like.
And then Bobby Slayton.
Right.
And then really nobody else.
I'm trying to think of another one, yeah. Just those when they do the cover of the Cadillac song and they have.
Oh, right.
For the sake of them being extremely white, right, they had some white people in there, yeah.
I thought, how neat is this? This is a huge. This will be an Oscar contending movie.
Yeah.
And people will go see it and they're going to go. They're going to be watching this musical and blah, blah, blah. Holy shit, was that Jimmy Pardo? Like, I love musicals.
Were you familiar with this musical?
I was.
Okay, good.
And by the way, if you have not YouTubed Jennifer Holliday doing And I'm Telling You, do yourself a favor and do that.
Okay.
Because it will give you chills. Hmm. And so I was familiar with it. I love musicals. I'm theoretically in show business. This is a dream come true. And I mean that sincerely.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm in a movie, like – I couldn't ask to be in a better movie. I don't care if it's 2.5 lines or whatever small thing it is. I'm thrilled. So I should have said no photos. I'm kidding. Jesus. This is a comedy network. You make jokes and everybody acts like you're interrupting some sort of boiler room deal going on.
Kevin, the photographer, has just stepped in for the photos you will see on this website. Get a photo of consternated Jimmy Pardo right as upset right now.
So I know this is so long-winded.
This is what you're here for.
I know, but I feel like I'm monopolizing my story.
No.
I know that's a stupid thing to say. I really do. I feel
what
like
do you want me to do? Give you the light on your own story?
Do something.
No, keep going.
Make me feel
stretch
like
it. Stretch
you're
it.
Involved.
This play is for
the,
time.
I don't know how I managed to make this literally 1 minute story last as long as it already has.
This is why I wanted you here in the first place.
So, that and the people necking you on Twitter, you're going to have Jimmy Pardo on to talk about Dreamgirls. and by the way, I don't disagree. It turns out it's a good payoff because in my head, I'm like, it's a 2 minute story. The movie, here come the posters, here come everything. I can't wait to go see this thing. You know, I want to see it anyway.
Yeah.
I'm going to go. I go see every filmed musical. I love musicals. I don't know why I became Richard Nixon to the end of that sentence. I love musicals. And then I see that there's a premiere going on. You know, I forget where. I don't know if it was on Hollywood Boulevard or wherever one of these their premiere was. I'm like, that seems weird. Why the hell was I invited to the premiere? What's going on here? So I call my manager. I go, why am I not invited to the premiere? That's like that I saw advertised on Entertainment Weekly or whatever it was. And
I don't know, man. I
don't know. Let me call that second AD. Yeah. See if I can't get to the bottom of this. So he calls back, and like a minute later, and he's like, "Hey, Jim." Like, oh.
I was going to ask how you found out.
Oh. Yeah, they went back to the VO. Like, okay.
Did they use your voice for the VO?
No, they used the same guy's voice kind of throughout. It's kind of a constant.
Fuck that guy.
But it still was like, damn it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've had great success as a comic in this town. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had late night television and I've had, you know, occasionally, you know, I'll do panel and I'll do all sorts of stuff as a comic. But this was neat for me.
Of course.
You know, yeah, it was, and I've done Becker and I've done other, you know, Monk, and I've done some acting stuff. Nothing more than 5 lines because I can't handle it. But I've done some. But this was kind of – even though this was the smallest of the roles, it was great. So I was bummed. You know, I was really bummed.
Yeah.
You know, when I got cut out of The Informant the day before I had to shoot it, part of me was relieved that I didn't have to do any of it.
Right, yeah, because the nerves are still there.
Right. So I didn't have to have that knot in my stomach of, oh, boy, I hope I don't suck. I hope they don't cut me out, which I understand they cut almost everybody out of that movie because they shot 9 hours to make an hour and a half movie. So Dreamgirls, it's going to open, and my wife and I go see it at the Cinerama Dome. And where we see all of our musical openings. We saw Les Mis there. We saw Rent there.
Oh.
I'm excited to see it. And, I'm not angry.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to see it. I was a little – part of me admittedly was a little bit of a knot in my stomach over, what if they recast it? Like, what if that part comes and it's somebody else? Like, you know, that would suck.
Oh, because then you're also going like – did my manager know and decide not to tell me?
Right.
Who's not telling me? You're so good that that didn't happen.
Right. So so I'm loving it, by the way. And I love this movie. And I watched it again last night prepping for this story that I lived. I still love this movie. I think it's a great movie.
I still cried
again last night twice. But when I went in to see it, so I'm loving it. But I'm still like, where's my scene? Where's it happen? And then when it came on, it was the voiceover of the Crystal Room is probably ever the first time ever Rainbow recording artist, you know, the Dreams.
Yeah.
All of a sudden it was like, okay, they didn't recast me. I don't look foolish. They just went back to the original script. No big deal. And then I had that release of tension. And then literally 3 minutes later is – and I'm telling you, Jennifer Hudson singing that.
Oh, right. That's right.
It almost comes almost to Dreams, and then there's the fight, and then there's that song. Where, and I'm not kidding, Matt, for the maybe the one and only time in my life, I wanted to give a movie a standing ovation.
It's like, incredible. I was at home yesterday watching it, had the same feeling. And I, not long on the heels of watching La La Land, and I don't mean to disparage that film, but when you watch La La Land and then you watch this movie, and Jennifer Hudson in particular, you go like, what are we doing here?
What are we doing, right?
What are we doing?
And even – and I know you're singled out Jennifer Hudson, but even Beyonce with her – she got down the Diana Ross's shoulders and her moves. Like she wasn't Beyonce anymore. She was that character. And I feel the same way. I liked La La Land. I'm not a La La Land basher. I know that's very in vogue these days to be mad at that movie. It's a movie. Great. I got a trophy from the Golden Globes. Move on with your life. Who cares? I wanted to erupt from my seat at the end of and I'm telling you, in a movie that's bananas.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the movie plays out, and then I know I was sobbing in the movie theater by the end of it when they reunite at the end. Now here's the thing. I get residuals as if I was in the movie. I believe I'm on IMDb as uncredited.
Yes. How do you get residuals if you didn't make the cut?
Let's stop talking about it.
No, right.
I don't know. But I'll tell you what. When that first went to DVD, my stupid little part got some money.
So does that – that doesn't exist as a deleted scene or anything?
No.
I looked for it.
So then then I had that hope. I was well, maybe there's going to be – when it goes – there's all these extra features on the DVD – it's like maybe Bill's going to be this is a young comedian who I thought was great, but it just didn't work for the story. But then that wasn't even there, which was a bummer.
I got three things I want in this life. Trump to release his tax returns, the studio to release your scene in Dreamgirls, and to get you on General Hospital.
Oh, boy. All three are welcomed. All three. I've had friends tell me, hey, contact Bill Condon's office. They'll give you that footage.
Oh.
Guess what I'm never doing?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, come on. How needy are you? You got to make that phone call, right?
Hi, James Pardo here. Listen.
Listen, remember 10 years ago where it took 13 hours to shoot a 2-minute scene? I'm going to need that footage.
You probably got that near you, right? Like just in the file cabinet?
You didn't even think it was worth putting in the extra features? By the way, I think there's a very good chance of one of those ever happening. I think of the three, me getting on General Hospital is the one that may happen.
Yeah.
I'm not saying there's anything in the works because there is not.
Well, that's the thing. If you listen to Never Not Funny, which is one of the most venerable, brilliant podcast institutions, I think it's fair to say.
All I do is say thank you.
2006, since 2006. Super Ego Mine goes back to 2006. We are grandfathers and pillars of the podcasting society.
Yes.
Mount Rushmore of podcasting, where are you?
Oh, that well, the Mount Rushmore I've seen has Sarah Koenig and Mark Maron on it, and they don't even know we exist.
No. Anyway, my point is—
Why do I have to get negative?
Jimmy is a big fan and always has been of General Hospital, and if there's— By any chance, anyone listening out there that can get this man on General Hospital, what a great service will have been done. Two of the big three things that this country needs, one of them down.
Well, you should know this. I can handle doing two lines the best of anybody. I'm more than willing to walk any, you know, doctor.
Yeah.
This woman's here. I'm happy to do it.
That would be great. But there's got to be someone. There's got to be someone.
I'm friends with cast members. I've done stuff for them. I've done General Hospital Now, the web series. I've been on the set. I've been close. I just haven't been given that one line. And then even when I watch it, I'm like, I couldn't have been that cop.
Yeah.
I couldn't have been that guy with the
– Yeah.
That not gorgeous-looking soap opera star delivering the two lines. I could have been that.
God damn it. Make it happen.
I don't know. I think Condon's blackballed me.
He put out the word.
What are your other questions about Dreamgirls that I can answer now now that I've told the full story?
Okay. I think you basically covered everything. Hold on.
Does that qualify as a I was there too? Does this qualify?
This is actually – this is specifically one thing I've done before with Paul Scheer. I call it I wasn't there too. He was in Meet Dave and he was – cut, but not only cut, but recast as well.
Oh, so no!
When you said that, I was like, you should listen. His story is incredible, too.
I'm not kidding. That may be the only episode of this I have not listened to.
Yeah, it's a
I also haven't listened to the Paul F. Tompkins one. What if I just started listening to them all? comes out, I'd listen to Tobolowsky and Diane Franklin.
Okay, so let's see. Well, this is a general question, but I was—
More than happy to answer any Dreamgirls questions.
Okay. Well, this is— Do you like acting as much as comedy?
No.
Okay.
No. If I was better at it, yes.
Okay.
Or if I was given, you know what, Matt, if I was given the security of, hey, it's the Jimmy Pardo show, and I could not worry about being fired every single day,
yeah.
I think I could enjoy it.
Yeah.
But whenever I'm a guest star on something, I literally, if I see the guy walking anywhere near my trailer, I feel like that, here it comes.
Which never fuels the best performance, and it's such a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
Here's one. Okay. So when you did your lines, did you do any thought in terms of not just memorizing but actual character or acting? Like did you base it on your own comedic persona?
I did. I just kind of you know, as a guy that emceed comedy clubs for years, I just saw it as that.
Right.
And if I was alive then, I would have been that guy.
Right.
Like there's no doubt in my mind I would have been the guy going out there with the beautiful little tie and the gorgeous suit, welcoming everybody and, you know, maybe doing a minute or two and then introducing the talent.
Tell me about this suit. What was it like?
I want to say it was I want to say it was shark skin, but I don't think it was shark skin.
But it had like a sheen to it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And it fit me better than any suits ever fit in my entire life.
Really? And they didn't let you keep it, did they?
No, because it was a period piece.
Right. And yeah. Right.
Although usually whenever I've done anything – there's not a lot of other 5 foot four and a half hosts out there. So I'm usually pretty lucky and I get to keep the wardrobe.
So it was a period piece, so they didn't custom make it. They found that suit.
Yeah.
Did they try you through a bunch or just the—
Maybe two or three. Yeah. Took some photos and then I showed up and it was the one that I wanted too.
Like, oh, that's good.
I hope that's the version of me that ends up on the floor. That's what I said. Hope that's the good looking suit that doesn't make the movie.
Those are all my questions for Dreamgirls. You literally hit everything else in there.
I'm a good storyteller.
You don't need me. You don't need me for this podcast. But I do have a couple other questions.
Oh, great.
Okay. According to your Wikipedia page, in 1986, you moved to Pasadena to go to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts and Sciences, right?
Well, there are no sciences.
I just put that on.
It's the American Academy of Dramatic Arts.
Pasadena. I live in Pasadena right now.
It's no longer there. Now it's in Hollywood.
Yeah.
I think it's right on La Brea. Might be on Highland.
In Pasadena, I remember when it was there. My friend Jeremy went there as well. But you only stayed a year, right?
That was all that it was decided I would stay. I moved from Chicago to Pasadena to go to school at the because I had a check. And I was able to do a monologue from All My Sons.
Oh, wow.
And
do you remember any of that?
No. Okay. No. You know, they tour the country, they do auditions, and then I really believe it's if you have the money, you get in.
That place?
Or you have to really, really suck to not be accepted.
Yeah.
And I probably was a better actor then than I am today.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think I was ever in my head when I was younger as far as acting goes. So I went there for a year, and it was you know, it's basically fame, as I'm sure your friend Jeremy told you. Adam Scott's also gone there. He and I have talked about it at length.
Yeah. Jeremy only lasted a year, too.
Oh, what year did he go, out of curiosity?
It would have been probably early 90s, I think.
Paul Rudd went there for a year, I think. Chelsea Crisp, who is on Fresh Off the Boat now, she went there. But she loved her experience. I was a dick. that's the truth. I took a year off from high school, maybe even 2 years off from high school. 2 years. And managed record stores and hung out with rock stars and went to concerts and did everything that somebody working in a record store would do. And then it was like, I should go to school. I should do – you know, this is – you know, if my dream is to be a performer, I should – and I went to Second City in Chicago during that time too.
Uh-huh.
But it was like – but I should probably go to this acting school.
Wait, so you said you took off high school?
No, after high school, 2 years after high school.
Oh, after high school.
I didn't go to college.
Okay, gotcha.
I went – I took time off and worked and went to Second City, like I said. And but then when I saw this American Academy of Dramatic Arts was coming, it's like, well, that seems to make sense. I should go do that. And then when I got there, everybody was fresh out of high school for the most part. There were a couple of adults, but for the most part, it was honestly rich white kids – right out of high school, whose mommy and daddy were paying for their apartment and paying for their tuition. And my parents helped me a little bit financially, but for the most part, I also had to have a full-time job in addition to going to school full-time.
Yeah.
And I also felt like I was a man who had lived life.
Yeah.
So I kind of rebelled against the teachers when really that wasn't in my best interest because I had to like – I don't know. And I just – there was way too much focus on singing and dancing. And acting was kind of just like the third thing because it was like fame.
Yeah.
So I would butt heads with, I don't know, to quote the CNN Brienne that when she was questioned by Trump's spokesman before the election, what polls are you talking about?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I don't know. All of them. So to quote her, I want to say I butted heads with I don't know all of my teachers. And so when it came time to when you have your assessment for the next year, they were like, you know, where do you see it? And I was willing to go back for the next year. But I also understood if they didn't want me back. And then when I got my letter saying, you know, we're not going to have you back, I went nuts and went to the school. And how dare you not include me? And the guy's like, I forget his name. I think he's since passed away. Bryn something was his name. And he goes, now, Jim, this is why we ask you to wait a week before you come in to talk about this. And I went, guess what? I don't go to school here, so you're going to hear about it now. And he's like, everybody agrees that you're a brilliantly funny comedian. You should really focus on that and not on acting. And I don't disagree with anything he said, but you don't want to hear it, you know?
Especially in that context.
Yeah, and you know, nobody likes to be rejected, even though basically I was going to break up with them before they broke up with me, or at least I was giving them the out to.
Right.
So yes, I did that for a year and then went back to Chicago and started doing stand-up.
Was that part of the impetus for doing that, like really saying, yeah, maybe they're right?
Well, you know what? I worked at the Warehouse Records in Pasadena, which is now a Golfsmith.
Oh, Warehouse Records. Yeah, I remember that chain. We had one in Whittier. I grew up not far from there. Yeah.
They were a great chain. You know, they and Music Plus were the big chains.
And they merged eventually.
I think they did, yeah.
And there was also Licorice Pizza, which became Sam Goody. Yeah. Greatest name for a store ever.
Licorice Pizza? Love it. Worst name? Sam Goody. Sam Goody was an awful mall chain. Yeah. I was in the music business for way too long, and I have a lot of opinions about record stores, apparently. I was one day just doing my job at the record store, and a guy thought I was hysterical, and he said, here's my card. I own the Ice House. Why don't you come and do some time? And I was like, I don't even know what that means. And he goes, well, you know.
No idea. This is how you got into comedy.
He said, put an act together. And I was like, okay. And then I never did it because it scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Then I went back to Chicago. Quite frankly, I was homesick and I wanted to go back and just visit. And then because I left all my stuff here, I left some clothes here, I left furniture here with my roommates. And the goal was to come back like in August and pursue the dream of being a comic or an actor or whatever I was going to do without going to the academy. Started working back at a record store that I was working at there. Long-windedly, Bob Odenkirk. You don't know this story.
No.
This is a fun story.
Yeah.
Bob Odenkirk would come into my record store in Naperville, Illinois. I was the manager there. We didn't do a lot of business. And every Saturday morning or every other Saturday, Bob would go out to Naperville to visit his parents. And Bob wasn't Bob Odenkirk yet. He was just a guy in a sketch group called, I think, Duck Logic. And he would come in and we would just make each other laugh. And then at one point he says, he goes, you know, you're the funniest guy I've ever met. You should do stand-up. My roommate, Bill, does a night right down the street here on Saturday nights. Why don't you come in? I'm on the show this week. Why don't you come and watch that and see if that's something you'd want to do? And it's like, yeah, you know, everybody's always told me I should be a comic, but I never wanted to be that guy. Even though it really is what I should have been doing, and my bones told me that. So I go to that show that Bob was on, and by the way, I called I went to high school with a guy named Tom Odenkirk.
Oh.
So every time Bob Odenkirk would walk in, I'd go, Tommy! And one time I said to my employee, I go, I don't think his name's Tom. And she said, that's okay. He thinks your name is Johnny. But we had this kind of relationship. Uh-huh. I went to that show. A guy I went to high school with, who's now a radio personality on WGN in Chicago, Bill Leff. I walk in and I said, Bill. And he goes, are you on the show? I go, no, I just came to watch. Odenkirk invited me in. And he goes, oh, you got to be doing stand-up. You're the funniest guy in high school. You got to be doing stand-up. And I was like, yeah, boy, okay. I said, well, that's kind of why I'm here, kind of to scope it out. And he's like, oh, you don't want to start here. This is like a book. You know, start going to open mics and, you know, get an act together. And I was like, okay. And so that was it. That's how it started. So Odenkirk was the one that kind of gave me the push. Uh-huh. And then Bill Leff was the one that kind of carried it along. And then here we are.
Here we are. And in fact, I'll use this to wrap up. But you're basically a staple on Conan, either as a panelist in featured segments and then as the warm-up comic for how many years?
I started day one at the Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien. Then we were on there for 7 months. We all got fired. Jay Leno wanted his job back. Somebody thought that was a good idea. what is that, 2009? And what is this, 2007?
17.
So that's 8. I was there for 7 years.
Okay. So how do you find the difference between your regular stand-up work and warm-up work? And because that's a daily basis, like does a drudgery ever come in there, or a day when you're not in the mood and you have to muster it up and do you just go into professional mode?
Yeah, it's that. And it's I'm very lucky in that the Conan they didn't want the warm-up act that threw out candy and had dance contests and stuff like that.
Right.
They never wanted that. So yeah. – When they offered me the job, I was resistant at first because I was like, I don't want to do that. And they're like, no, you don't do that. Just go out there and be fun.
Do your thing.
And, you know, I do so much crowd work in my act anyway that it's like – and it almost goes back to the question of like about that character for Dreamgirls. That's kind of who I am. Mm-hmm. So like for me to have an audience at a live TV taping where you really can just say, what's your name, where you're from – you know, who's in from out of town, and everybody's in from out of town. So, oh, where are you from? Texas. What are you doing in Texas? Blah, blah, blah. Funny, 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 you know? So every day was different. I had 3 set jokes about turning your pagers off and no smoking and whatever. But it was different every day. So I never really saw it as drudgery because I loved going there. I loved the job. Towards the end of my tenure, I was maybe done.
Uh-huh.
And maybe they were done with me. But to long-windedly answer your question, it's different in that it's not my show. You know, when I'm doing stand-up, that's my time and you can say or do whatever you want. They're there to see Conan and I'm there to set it up for Conan.
All right.
So even if somebody in the audience is being an A, and I was able to get away with some stuff on, you know, calling people hillbillies or whatever if they were being stupid. But for the most part, I had to remember this isn't you. This is about them, about Conan. And the show. So I'd have to watch my footing a little bit. But not really.
Yeah.
I was pretty lucky. They were great to me from day one.
All those guys that I know over there, just they love you. They speak so highly of you.
Oh, that's nice.
It just seems like the most wonderful TV family.
I love it. Yeah. And I think it's because they all came from New York. And they all had you know, they had 20 years under their belt in New York, and then they moved to L.A. So, like, none of them had that L.A. were the most important thing going on in the world show attitude. Uh-huh. And it felt like you're doing community theater, but you're doing television. Yeah. It was I loved it. And I would still be there if, you know, I started hosting a show on Science Channel. And
yeah, Race to Escape.
Race to Escape,
yes.
Yeah. Which was great. I love that show.
Is there going to be some more, do you think?
Sadly, there are not.
God damn it.
I don't understand it either. I don't understand it at all.
It's such a great concept.
And we were – the guy Riaz who created it, it was like a little bit ahead of the curve too. Like we're doing the show and nobody had ever heard of escape rooms.
Right, and they're everywhere now.
Now they're everywhere. Yeah. And I think some people are developing like celebrity escape rooms or whatever as a TV show. But this was – I loved it because it was educational and it was great for families.
Right.
And more importantly – it gave me a paycheck and put me on television so that people in high school think I'm done something.
Well, I can't thank you enough for being here. You're one of the funniest people alive.
Oh, my God.
I just love talking to you.
So and I you, sir. Thank you for having me.
That was great.
Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you, you, for listening. Thank you, me, for doing this. If you can connect me to a guest for this show, please email me at iwasthere2pod@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at Matt Gourley. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next episode.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.